Today is Friday. It's November 4th, 2016. The election is in just a few days, but more importantly, today as we speak is the day of the Chicago Cubs parade. We're the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. Portions of this podcast can normally be heard on my Saturday afternoon show at 1:30 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Eric Zorn, the delightful columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Mondays, or not Wednesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
He reads them all.
And he's online all day long.
And Monday's on Bill and Wendy's show on WGN, fine American radio station.
Okay, are you done now? Kristen McQuarrie normally joins us. She cannot today. Is she doing parade coverage?
She's saving a spot for her family, maybe?
Well,
big White Sox fan. She's probably in hiding somewhere, is more likely.
Well, we are sitting in the Tribune Tower on the 7th floor overlooking Michigan Avenue. Literally, there's a window there. I'm not sure the parade is coming down this route. It's funny to me how quickly they're cobbling this thing together, and there will be a couple million people in Chicago for this today.
It's it feels to me like it, I guess a lot like the Blackhawk celebrations, but I'm also feeling a little bit of the 2008 election night when there was that sort of magic in the air in Chicago, and people were gathering for the Barack Obama celebration. They didn't know the outcome then like they do now, but there's just that sort of spark around people.
I know what you mean.
If Kristen were here, she would ask us, I think, why is the city so nuts about the Cubs? And the White Sox World Series, I mean, it was greeted with some enthusiasm, but nothing like what we're seeing with the
Cubs. The White Sox parade was a big parade, too. You remember that, right? They did that right. They did everything that you would do for this. But it's just the age-old question, Eric. The Cubs have a bigger fan base, right?
Right, yeah.
You don't understand that?
I mean, I understand that it is bigger, but I guess I'm never exactly sure why it's bigger. And
I think it has to do with TV.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, aside from the national cable, when GN went cable, every Cubs game when I was growing up was on TV. Every White Sox game wasn't. So I think that's part of it. I think the lore of it. Look, we're facing as Cubs fans an existential crisis now, because that which kept us alive is past. We've succeeded at that. What do we do now?
Somebody said to me, are you going to miss having that legacy of being the lovable losers?
No.
I said,
no.
The organization never really has embraced that, and the fans see that as passe. But there's something to... Now we're just another run-of-the-mill great baseball team.
Right.
Instead of the Cubs, whose magic included that they could never win the World Series.
How much of our oxygen was taking up with phrases like the curse?
Totally.
And those things are gone now.
Wait till next year. No, I don't think you're going to miss that at all, really. I mean, that was just a way of rationalizing. Continuing to follow the team through all that failure it's built our character. It's all about winning. It always has been.
You're the one that said last week they should put foul ball guy in the parade. And by the way, he, according to the USA Today today, is not going to be in the parade.
He's not.
Someone said that he should be in the lead float.
He should not.
Rising out of a bucket of goat blood naked.
They should introduce him.
Maybe
they should introduce him at the rally. It just seems like the entire city, the media, the team, the fans, everybody owes that guy.
An apology?
Not necessarily a total apology, but just like a welcome back, all is forgiven, a forgiveness.
He doesn't want it. He's not even going to the parade. He's not even going to be at the parade.
Yeah, well, I think this would be something for next year.
What do you mean? Like
opening day?
Opening day or
first pitch or
game
something?
Two or something like that. I mean, just this maybe isn't the time. And if he wants it, he can have it. So it's up to him.
You know how with politicians, sometimes they'll have them introduced along with somebody famous so that nobody can boo them. They'll say, here's Governor Pat Quinn and Patrick Kane. So the fans like that. Well, we can't boo. It's Patrick Kane.
That's how in the old days they would get their tickets at face value. Right?
Well, what was Game 7 like for you guys?
We've spoken of this. I just had this weird confidence. And even in the ninth inning or the eighth inning home run, I'm like, well, okay, here we go. But it wasn't like, oh, my God, it's going to happen again. I never had it. I was home watching with my wife. You know what it was like? But better than that, I was texting with the world. And it's really changed. That's what's changed so much.
Texting with family and friends, you mean?
Family and friends. Friends who I haven't heard from in 20 years are reaching out, And so that's really what I was watching my phone as much as the game.
I was watching Twitter a lot. Johanna kept telling me, get off Twitter. Get in the moment. I said, I am in the moment. Twitter is completely in the moment. People were reacting, in real time to
what
was
going on. I mean, it's a different moment, though, because I was doing the same thing to where I'm missing snippets of the game because I'm reading what Frank Senate is tweeting or, you know, someone else like that.
Yeah, well, I was tweeting as I was watching the game, and a lot of my tweets were, say it isn't so, Joe, because I was
worried?
Do I know about radio? I know a little bit about radio. I know nothing about managing a baseball team. I thought Joe Maddon was about to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Oh.
I mean, really, weren't you just losing your mind the way he was handling Chapman and some of these player personnel moves he was making? And you thought, oh, my God, what are you doing?
Well, I wondered the night on game six when he let Chapman pitch for two innings. What was that about? They had a, 7-2 lead or 7-1 lead?
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a huge lead. Why do you burn your ace closer? The Indians didn't pitch Miller in game six. They let him rest.
Cubs
why
win,
would
right?
you?
Cubs, did the Cubs win? Cubs.
You had the luxury of sitting here now knowing that.
No, even.
It looked
then,
like
no.
we were going to give it
Even
away.
Then, I at those moments, I sit cross-legged, I rest my palms facing upward, and I let go, and I let Maddon. I mean, really, during those people are tweeting and all this, and I'm laughing because the guy won 103 games in the regular season. He knows what he's doing. It might have backfired, but he's the guy in the position to make the call.
He was trying to rush the game.
But those decisions are objectively bad when you look back on it. They won, but they won in spite of those moves, not because of them. Lester comes in, he's wild. He's throwing pitches all over the place, and then he finally settles down, gets into a groove.
Get him out of there.
And then he walks him. He takes him out after a walk that shouldn't have been a walk. They took Hendricks out after a walk
Still,
that shouldn't have been a walk. The umpire was not
a couple of magical moments in those last couple of games. Addison Russell's grand
slam.
Still
worked up about this.
Ross's home run. I mean, I was in a cab coming over yesterday, and my cab driver's from East Africa. I get in a cab at O'Hare, and he says, welcome to Chicago. The home of champions.
No, nice.
And as we're driving, he just looks up in the mirror and he says, how about that home run by Ross? I was so happy to see that for him. I mean, everybody can relate to that.
Miguel Montero, too. I want to put in a word for him because he's a guy who sort of got pushed to the outskirts, if you will, of the team. And he had a big grand slam against the Dodgers.
I think he only had two hits in the series.
And they were both huge. I mean, he provided, in many ways, the winning run in the 10th inning.
That's right.
So Miguel Montero.
Montero has the winning run in the 7th game of the World RBI in the World Series.
After Montero got that hit, somebody tweeted, immigrants getting the job done. It's a line from Hamilton.
Okay, let's do that now, Eric. So let's segue to politics for a second here, and then we'll let you guys go. But what is the thought today, Friday, with the election Tuesday, about the impact James Comey's, air quotes now, investigation will have on the election?
I still think it could be significant, and I don't think it's going to be huge. I think it's going to be a small impact, but that small impact at this point in the race could end up being significant. You know, I was furious about what happened on last Friday. I thought it was extremely irresponsible what he said and how he said it. Unprecedented, just violated all the norms of the FBI, and bipartisan prosecutors have castigated him for it.
Well, you still feel that way, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Unless he knew something, all he knew was that there's emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop from Huma, that Huma had sent through the Clinton server. He doesn't know if they were all duplicates.
No, and he doesn't. So I see other people say, well, clearly they read some of these emails, so they know. Well, if that's the case, then they're breaking the law,
what
right?
Do you mean?
Well,
they didn't have a warrant. They didn't get a warrant until Saturday.
So they asked for the warrant, and then now they're looking. That was after Comey made his announcement, and so people said, well, I mean, it's the FBI. Clearly,
what do
they looked.
Steve, why did he do it then?
I don't know. I'm a guy who maybe to a fault sometimes puts his faith in institutions. I just do. I don't understand it.
I think it's, you know how sometimes in an NBA game an official misses a call on one end of the court?
And they try to, but boy, this is a terrible even-upper. I mean, you're talking about because he didn't indict? Yeah, he broke the rules, not broke the rules, but he violated the norm when he had that news conference in July. You know, where he said, well, we were this close to charging her.
Yeah, right.
Or,
and then
you know,
he made sure that he layered on some scorn to Hillary Clinton as though that's sort of accommodating people's questioning what he was doing. And it's like, dude, your job is yes or no.
Right.
If it's yes, then proceed. If it's no, we don't need you to moralize or criticize. That's not your job.
I mean, can you imagine a prosecutor coming forward and saying, you know, we really looked hard at Blagojevich
exactly.
and here are all the things he did wrong, but we're not going to charge him.
Well,
that's not what they do.
He didn't. I want to correct you a little bit, Steve. He did not say over the summer that we came this close to charging Hillary Clinton. He said that no responsible prosecutor would have indicted her.
You're right.
He went on to say that she was very careless with her emails. I don't think they're going to find anything in this new batch of emails from Huma. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to find out in December, January, that there was really nothing there, nothing new, nothing probative. There was nothing to warrant an indictment, and that people who decided to change their vote, which I don't think that many people are, but I think there are people who probably are discouraged from voting.
Well, there's certainly been movement. I mean,
yeah, but some of that movement was happening anyway, and some of that I think you can attribute to Donald Trump just staying out of the news. Just
that's true.
Reading his same stump speech.
He hasn't done anything insane in a week.
Because he hasn't had to, though. I mean, he stayed out of the news because she's so in it, you know, and that she's so in it because of Comey. So, I mean, I think that all has to do with things.
I think that we're seeing a new level of discipline from Trump.
He's presidential.
And the thing is that the bar—
Don't take that bait, Eric.
The bar is so low. He's just not insulting a Gold Star family,
right,
or being heard on tape grabbing a woman or whatever. But, and one thing that was supposed to happen this week and then didn't was that the woman was a 13-year-old girl said that he raped her when she was 13. She was going to have a news conference, and she got so many death threats, she said, that she decided she was going to stay quiet. That could have, you know, change things. Although I think that what Trump said earlier in the campaign, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose any support, I think he could be charged with raping a 13-year-old girl at this point.
Well, do you think that
support.
The media is also
don't care?
Wow, Eric. Do you think that the media is also falling into the trap of this, what you guys like to call false equivalence? That is, we have to cover this email scandal, even though there's really no there. This has not actually shown any malice or criminal activity on Hillary Clinton's. We don't even know what's in there.
Well, we don't. Right, so we don't know if there's no there.
So what's the appropriate coverage of that?
I don't know, you know, and the only prediction I've had correct with this whole election was that the thing that would hurt Clinton the most would be this fatigue of constant investigation. And I said that when she announced, and it's the only thing I got right. And I think that's what's going to hurt her.
But the media is complicit in that, too.
I understand that, but that's what's going to hurt her, because people are going to be voting saying, okay, maybe not this specific email, but oh my God, are we really going to do this again?
But this is all Republicans
That's
all they do.
I'm not saying it's her fault or her responsibility. I'm just saying it's the world with her in it, and I think it's exhausting to people.
That's why I wish she hadn't run. You know, even if she wins, this is our future here, kids. You know what I mean?
I think Joe Biden would be up by 20 points at this point.
What do you think? The other candidate,
Bernie Sanders
would have been
He would be in a lot of trouble, because a story that we're not talking about much is the Obamacare numbers story that came out, that Obamacare is having somewhat predictable problems, but that Bernie Sanders is for single payer. For some reason, that's just not a starter with the American electorate.
I think we will end up with single payer one day. I mean, I think it's just we're just going through the painful birthing process now, A. B, with the Obamacare story, that's one that is so, well, I'm no expert, but it seems to, you talk about false equivalence, there's no equivalence here. When we do the Obamacare story, we talk about the 25% premium increase. We don't say that involves 8 million people out of a couple of 100 million people are going to vote next week. 8 million are the ones who are seeing that increase. And most of those, 87%, they say, are entitled to subsidies that would fully offset that, okay?
And
so that's a small number, A. B, you know, I've talked about this. I had major surgery this summer, big time rip, you know, and I would be uninsurable in my future if it wasn't for Obamacare. Uninsurable. My kids are on my policy for 25 until they're 25 because of Obamacare. There has been so much good that is also part of it that isn't in the stories when we talk about the premiums going up.
And one of the things, Steve, is that these premium increases are put them back at about the level that the Congressional Budget Office and all the forecasters predicted that it would be at. That the premiums were actually quite a bit lower at the beginning than people had thought, because the insurance companies thought were sort of lowballing it, thinking they could get in on these markets and make a profit. Turns out that, I mean, these premium increases are sharp, but they're not surprising to anyone who was looking at the long-term projections. That said, it's clearly, you know, the program needs some tweaking.
Oh, sure.
But you know, anyway, I'm just saying that I think Bernie Sanders would probably be having a significantly hard time also with Trump.
Let me ask you guys one last thing. If we did WTF brackets for the election, and you've got 32 teams, we won't fill out the whole bracket here. And, you know, in a perfect world, 16 are from the Democrats, starting with maybe Wasserman Smith's
Schultz.
Yeah, Schultz stuff through, you know, everything Hillary's done. And then you've got the Trump side, too. Although, really, if it was really going to be fun, of the 32, probably 25 of them belong to Donald Trump. But what are some of the great WTF moments? Because I'm thinking this Anthony Weiner thing will be in the final four. I mean, think about that.
I heard a commentator say, and he's right, that the election, the future of this country, could come down to emails from Anthony Weiner.
To a 16-year-old or a sub-16-year-old or something like that.
Well, I would say that in the Gold Star, the attack on the Gold Star family was a huge WTF moment. The Access Hollywood tape of Donald Trump talking about how he enjoys being a sexual predator was certainly one of those. Let's see. Gosh, there's so many.
Well, there are. For me, a serious one is the Muslim ban.
That's the one I could. That was the first. I thought when that happened, I thought, you're done. You're toast.
Right.
You're putting it in writing. Like, look at how proud I am of this position. It wasn't a quip. He wrote it out and handed it out. That there will be a religious test.
The attack on the Mexican judge.
And I think what the Muslim ban betrayed was an absolute misunderstanding of this country, of what it stands for, of what its laws are.
No, that's a misunderstanding on your part.
No, not about the laws. I mean, the Constitution says, and for a guy to come up and propose this seriously, when he did that, there was no turning back for me.
So here's another WTF moment that will be hard, that has to be in the final eight. Him parading the four women that Clinton did or didn't have an affair with at the third debate. Holy cow.
Yeah, all his debate performances, the nasty, you know, what a nasty woman. That was, you know, a startling moment. I mean, you say most of them, 25, 28 of them are things Trump said and did.
If I can toss one to the Trump supporters, the basket of deplorables, was one of her bigger mistakes.
I got to stop defending everything.
It was a mistake.
But Eric, you wrote extensively about how, in fact, there is a basket of deplorability in this country. You do surveys, and statistically, there's a lot of deplorable thought out
there. The Klan newspapers endorsed him. I'm getting
that's
anti-Semitic.
That is not fair to Donald Trump.
I am getting anti-Semitic mail from people, saying, you Jews are supporting Trump. I can't believe you. Typical Jew columnist. Now, this distresses me. I'm not Jewish. But it's like this.
You're not typical either.
I'm not typical, right? Exactly. But that they, that this kind of feeling is just brought out. I don't know if Donald Trump in his heart is anti-Semitic or racist, but I do know that he has given lots of encouragement and comfort to anti-Semites and racists. And exactly what percentage of his support is people who are utterly deplorable, I don't know, but it's high.
Okay, still shouldn't have said it, or you should have had someone else say
shouldn't
it.
Shouldn't have said it. Yeah. She's right. I mean, it was bad politics. But so, just looking at this election, how are we going to interpret? How do we interpret this? Even if Hillary Clinton wins, I still think she probably will. The percentage of people in this country who basically wanted to upend the apple cart, electing Donald Trump is, basically giving the finger to Washington. It is giving the finger to the media. All these institutions that have their faults, no question about it, but they are the bulwark of democracy.
The election process, the Justice Department, FBI.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like, it's basically, and many of our cultural norms. This is all, it's all a big screw you to those things. That's what Trump voters are angry. I think a lot of them are angry. They hate the media. They hate Washington. They hate conventional politicians. They hate foreigners.
Now, he's the human Molotov cocktail, is what he is. That's what they're throwing at all of these things.
And so whether it's 51% or 48% or whatever who endorse that, it's a huge problem in this country.
Sure, and Hillary has to, and that's Hillary's problem. That will be, if she wins the election, she has to attend to that.
Right, and we've had these conversations before. It's not her responsibility, but it is her problem. I mean, she didn't cause it. She's got to deal with it.
Okay. What are you recommending, guys? Something you're reading, watching, listening to, eating, or drinking? And I know we're all eating and drinking too much, but anything that you want to pass along to our listeners?
Well, I suggest that everyone sits with their legs crossed and their palms facing toward the air and just breathe deeply and remember that on Wednesday morning when we all wake up, the new fight will begin.
Oh, hooray. Thank you for that comforting thought.
I just want to put in a plug for Songs of Good Cheer. John, you've been there many times when you lived in town.
A great theme for it this year, too.
We are rehearsing in rehearsals, and we have five shows in December 8th through 11th. at the Old Town School of Folk Music, oldtownschool.org. It's for charity. Mary Shamik and I headline it. We have great musicians join us.
Is it too late to turn in your Santa Claus story to win free tickets?
It's not. No, there's another. There's a Santa Claus story, and if you look at Mary Shamik online, her stuff.
Last Sunday's paper.
And look at her column. She'll talk about the contest. People have been sending us a lot of touching stories about their experiences with Santa Claus growing up. So.
Yeah. Both of you hinted at it in her last column on Sunday, and I'm anxious to hear the end of those stories. My recommendation will continue to be President Jefferson's first inaugural address when he said, "We are all Republicans, we are all Federalists." A difference in our votes isn't a difference in philosophy. We're all still Americans. And it really is a perfect antidote to what we've been talking about in this country. You know, we're so divisive. They were back then, too.
Are we gonna do? We should do predictions. Predictions.
Oh, this will be our last podcast before the election?
That's true, yeah.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton's going to win it with 300 electoral votes.
I'll say Hillary Clinton with – I'll go slightly under that. I'll go 290 electoral votes, I think. And I'll add, I think Tammy Duckworth's going to win.
Yeah.
I think the Republicans are going to win. I think I'll say three seats in the House and two in the Senate in Illinois. Hmm. And in the nation, I think the Democrats are going to hold on to the Senate. I'm saying they're going to win the Senate.
Yeah. And, I think Hillary's going to win. I think if she's going to win, she's going to win by a lot. You know, I think that all of this crap is just that. And she's going to win by 50 electoral votes, 60 electoral votes. She's going to win by a lot. My lips to God's ears.
We're going to try to meet again on Wednesday morning.
As you listen to this, share it with your friends. Enjoy it. And then check out the Mincing Rascals on Wednesday, the day after the election. I'm John Williams. That's Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn. Thank you, Bob Ferguson, our engineer, produced by Kristen Decker. We're the Mincing Rascals. We'll drop another podcast on you Wednesday.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you!